Hello and welcome to the Two Scrums Up podcast, where we share our successes and missteps practicing Scrum in an agency environment. While what works for us may not work for everyone, but we hope it sparks some ideas no matter how long or short you've been using Scrum. I'm Ken Medley, and with me today is my ridiculously amazing co-host, Mr. John Ragazine.
Oh, you're too kind, Ken. Thank you so much for the intro. But I am not the only one here. We have with us today our colleague and friend, Jamie Olmsted.
Hey, my name's Jamie Olmsted. I am a senior agile process lead here at Alley. I've been here for about a little over 3 years at this point, and actually started before we had implemented Scrum fully at Alley, and actually started as a project manager here. So it's interesting seeing the whole journey that we have been on here at Alley when it comes to Scrum and Agile. So I am excited to be on the podcast. So thank you for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. And so the way that we've been working things thus far on the podcast is we have these topics, we have a backlog full of them, and we've been basically sharing that with all of Alley or other folks and trying to get folks on who are passionate about certain topics. And Jamie, you leapt at the chance to talk about what we're going to talk about today. So do you want to intro what we are here to talk about?
Sure. So the topic that I pounced on was the sprint retrospective. So basically an opportunity for the team to reflect, inspect itself, plan for improvements that we want to make for the next sprint, and hopefully just keep continuously improving and getting better and better, and making our lives a little bit easier and our clients' lives a little bit better as we do that. So I always get really excited about my sprint retros with the team. It's been an area where I can be a little bit more creative as a Scrum Master, and it's your opportunity to really learn more about your team members and sort of like that area where you can start building that trust and really see teams really solidifying and forming and getting to that norming space. Like, you can actually see it in real time when you're doing your retro, and I think that's why I enjoy it so much.
Jamie, that's awesome. I'm glad you're here to talk about this topic for sure. One of the things that I've noticed throughout my career is that often when we talk about a retrospective meeting, it gets met sort of head on with this, whoa, like a meeting where we're going to not produce value. Like, we're not going to be coding. We're not going to be doing so. Like, hold up a minute. That seems like a waste of time. So we view it sort of the opposite. Like, it's a way to help us get more done over time. Can you speak to that a little bit?
I don't want to place any Scrum ritual, you know, rank them or anything, but I'm going to do that.
Which
right
ritual
now.
Do you love the most? Like, what was your favorite ritual?
I love the retro! So I think it's one of the most important rituals for sure, because some might see it as it's another meeting, like you were saying, Ken, where we're not actively developing or coding or anything, but there are so many instances where you create that space for the team to have a discussion and reflect on what's been going on. And you find these impediments, these bumps in the road where it's just so painful for the team sometimes.
Right.
And that can be, you know, workflow related, it can be interpersonal, any number of things. But when you stop and you take the time to address these things and really have those deep discussions, you end up, most of the time, you're going to end up saving time in the long run. Like, that's where the value comes in, is that you are going to remove those things by digging into them and identifying them. And hopefully that'll actually allow your team to quicken their pace and increase their velocity. A good example that our team ran into prior was just identifying an issue with like a deployment workflow. Mm-hmm. You know, the deploying to this production site is a 12-step nightmare that yeah. ends up involving not one person, but the entire team trying to pull apart this knot that's been created. And if you just keep plowing through that and you don't take the time to actually talk through it, you're just going to be banging your head against the wall. And by talking through it and figuring out, you know, maybe there's something we can put in place to make this easier, or, you know, like document a certain workflow so that team members can reference it, you're going to be saving time. People are going to be happier, hopefully, because they're not like struggling through this thing. And then your client is going to be able to get the work deployed even faster. So if you don't take the time or create the space to do that, you're never going to be able to identify those areas where, you know, you can actually improve and make things easier
right.
for yourself and the team.
Anything that has a 12-step process sounds awful. And sounds very, like it could be important. Optimized for sure.
It's very important. So you've talked about kind of the benefits of having a sprint retro is what we're talking about, really. It's the sprint retrospective where at the end of every sprint, and at Alley, mostly those are one-week sprints, we're looking at the previous week. We're talking about, you know, what could have gone better, what went really well, you know, what should we do more of, and what should we figure out a solution for so we don't have to do that anymore. And I think, like, Ken, you had talked about earlier sort of this idea of, like, what, we're having a meeting where we just talk about, like, what just happened. Like, that's awful or whatever. And I think it grows into, like, where retrospectives used to be. You know, quite often they were happening at the end of a project or end of an initiative. You'd have a retro and you talk about, like, months and months of experience. This is 1 week. But another term that I've heard utilized for retro is a project postmortem, which is, like, after death, you know, mm-hmm. like now that that's dead and in the ground, like
after your soul is gone yeah, from how, working so long on something.
Yeah. It's like, how can we best dance upon this grave or like be like never again, when really like this retro is not about like forgetting the past or whatever. Nothing's past. It's like the team is organically alive and moving forward. And so you want to identify those things that can benefit the team, both in cutting out like the BS basically that you talked about, but also highlighting the stuff that really works, you know, like sometimes it's like the best thing yeah. of a retro mm-hmm. that comes out is like, hey, that thing you did was awesome. Let's like operationalize that. Ken, do you agree?
Totally. It makes me think of one of the retro formats we use is DACI or DACI. How would you
banana
say that?
DACI?
Since we're drop. Yeah. drop, add, keep, and improve. Those are the four things that we clump our ideas into those four categories. And what you're talking about, John, is the things that we could keep. You know, it's like, that was great. Let's continue to like make sure that we actually do this because we're getting value from it for sure. The other thing about, John, you mentioned, you know, being on 1 week sprints here at Alley, it doesn't turn into a postmortem because we have this quick feedback cycle. We can iterate faster, you know? So hopefully, you know, postmortem sounds like, yeah, once something is dead, well, hopefully your project didn't die. Hopefully it got life and went out and lived in the real world. And, you
if
know,
you love it, set it free.
Lived a great life. I think it's... Right, exactly.
I think, too, like by focusing on the things that are working really well, that's where my team personally has established a lot of our norms, mm-hmm. like our team norms, being like, wow, this thing works so well. Like, it doesn't have to be a Kaizen that we only do for one sprint. Like, no, this is going to be something that we do all the time now. And we're all agreeing that it's something we want to do going forward. So it's been incredibly valuable for identifying those norms we want to keep too.
Can you share, like, what do you mean by a norm for us? Like, what, share that with us.
Yeah. A team norm for our team involves everybody sort of coming to a shared agreement that this is a ritual or practice that we want to keep going forward. It's like a shared understanding that this is how we all behave, and we're going to hold ourselves accountable to it and hold each other accountable to doing that, especially if it's something that is going to make our lives easier in the long run. Like, let's all make sure we're adhering to that. And when you're able to pinpoint those things, it just feels so good, because the fact is, some of the Kaizens or things that you learn and you want to experiment with that come out of a retro, they're not all gonna work. You might think they're a great idea, and the fact is, the next week when you're talking about it, it's like, ooh, that yeah. didn't work the way yeah. we thought it yeah. would. But yeah. when you can find those like pivotal changes that just like redefine the way that you're working, it feels so good. And that becomes sort of like a foundation for your team.
Right.
What's and you're just sort of like building that.
What's an example of a norm on your team?
Let's see. So one of the norms that we have is every morning, even though we have our stand-up at the end of the day, we all agree in the morning that when we log on at a certain time, we're going to put in channel, since we're all working remotely and we want to make our work visible, this is what I plan on working on today. And if you need help, you're going to ask then. We're all on different time zones, so we established it as a norm so that, you know, people who are logging in 3 hours later than someone else can still look back and say, oh, you know, this team member is going to be working on this feature. I'm going to be touching that a little bit too. So now I know, like, I want to communicate with that person. So it's for us, it's all about making work visible. Of course, we have some like really funny team norms too, where we have one that involves cookies and Oreos. Okay. For whatever reason.
Tell me more. I'm listening.
We call claiming a ticket, licking the ticket because of when you're a kid, you know, when you want, like, you don't want somebody else to get that last cookie or whatever it is. So you lick it so that you can claim it and it's yours.
Right. Yeah.
Like, our team calls it licking tickets because we're like claiming it and saying like, this is my ticket that I'm going to be moving forward on. Of course, like other people can hop in and help out on it or a team.
Oh,
but
my,
like,
gosh.
That's just one of our weird team norms that we've established. And
I think
works.
That's super cool. I think that's super funny. Yeah. A funny norm, you know, this is a little off topic, but a funny norm that my team has, which I find delightful, but it definitely like is the point of initiation when new folks join the team, is we'll be estimating tickets. We'll be doing so in channel, in a Slack channel. And so like you'll get a variety of Fibonacci numbers that come through and you know, determine on what you should land on or whatever. Except for those magical moments where everyone on the team points a ticket the same way. It's all blind voting.
Yes.
And they get all the same number. We call it Papparding, after George Papard, who played Hannibal Smith on the A-Team, because we love it when a plan comes together. It's like we're all in sync.
Ooh.
So it came from that quote, so much so that I had to go out and get a Slack emoji of him like lighting a cigar and then throwing a match, and then there's like an explosion behind him. And so whenever that happens, people are like, boom, like that emoji like flies out.
What's it say?
Well, it says, I love it when a plan comes together.
I agree with you that, you know, having something that comes out during retro that you want to keep doing and making it a norm, making it a behavior that your team always revisits is great. When I first got my sort of my latest iteration of the team that I'm working with, our sprint retros were very focused on like what could have gone better, what were the pain points, because I wanted to ferret those things out so I could help, right? That was where my mindset was. But then someone on the team pointed out, a developer on our team pointed out, she said, hey, can we also talk about the positive things? Can we celebrate our successes? And like that, like then leads to all these things that are really positive. It's like, oh, it was wonderful when you, someone, I called out for someone on my team. They were working through a pretty gnarly ticket inside of Jira. And at the end of their day, they would like be like, okay, I got these things done and I'll pick up this tomorrow. And it was just like a comment in Jira to themselves. But it also went out to me. It was out to anyone else following the ticket. And so then I know where that's at. So when I talk to the client, if I'm talking to them and they're not around, I'm like, oh yeah, this is where we are. This is going smoothly. This is kind of like sticking us up a little bit, you know? And it became this great thing where like more people started doing it once we talked about it as a team. And that's sort of like one of those things of like that keep stuff that you talked about, Ken. We wanted to keep that.
Jamie, I want your perspective on this question. Sometimes there are, you go into a retro and maybe it's, you know, it's the end of the sprint. Folks are tired, mentally tapped out. And we're like, all right, what's going well? What isn't going well? What should we keep? What should we drop? And, you know, we're excited. We're scrum masters. Like we live for the retro, right? You know? And then it's just sort of dead. Like it's stale. Nobody's really talking. There's not much engagement. What would you say to me in that situation? What tips and tricks can you give me?
I would personally say I have been on this journey. I have been on this journey. And I think what I've learned as a scrum master is it's really easy to just show up to a retro and ask those basic questions and then expect people to just open up automatically. And like that doesn't happen. I think what you need to do is be able to engage everyone with new ways to approach a retro. So as soon as I started experimenting with different tools and retro like practices, different exercises we could do, I saw the team starting to really open up more. Mm-hmm. And build that sort of trust. I think really you can't have a good retro if you haven't built that trust with your team when people do start to open up and share. So some of the things that I do to try and help build that trust once people do start sharing is I always like to thank people for sharing. And I did not always do this. That's something that I've learned from one of our coworkers, Sarah Rose. Mm-hmm. Just acknowledging that somebody is being really vulnerable by sharing their thoughts and feedback. And that's not easy. And actually thanking them for that. And then other people see you thanking that person and realizing like, oh, I can bring value to this by sharing and I'm safe to do that here. And then of course, like just leading by example yourself and being vulnerable. If you made a mistake during the sprint as a scrum master, or you wish you would have handled something differently, speak up and say that. It can be really helpful for others.
Amen to that. You know, as a scrum master, you're part of the team. So you should be talking about what went well, what you're nervous about, or like that's not going smoothly, because the team wants to know that, you know, and ultimately it'll forge that bond more. But it's so true. It's like, if you're not sort of like bringing fresh things, sometimes it's really hard. You know, we're having this every week. But if you're not bringing like, if you just ask the same questions every week, it becomes robotic and it becomes uninspired, you know? I was wondering a question for both of you. Let's go Jamie, then let's go Ken. So Jamie, like, is there a particular sprint retro protocol or activity that you really enjoy? Like, what's your fave?
Yes. So I have two.
We don't have time for two. We need
one. No, I'll go really quick. We got to time box this. So there's one called the radar.
Oh, you protocol. Stole mine. I love the radar. Radar's my favorite.
Yeah. Radar's the bomb. So basically you have different, like, let's say five different axes that you're measuring responses on from 0 to 10. 10 being, I feel like this is great, and 0 being like, this is garbage. What I love about the radar, and you get this sort of like, I don't know, like,
I feel like it's a spider web kind of.
Yeah, it looks like a little spider web.
Cobweb.
Yeah. So what I like to do is tailor that to whatever situation the team is going through. So each of the axes will, like, the value will always be changing. So that can be team happiness, how you feel we're holding each other accountable. Are we following up on Kaizens? Are we meeting our sprint goals? Like, and having the team actually rate how they feel that we're doing with this. And one of my favorite parts of that is when you overlay all these different results and answers, you start to see these either gaps where some team members think we're doing great at it, and others are like, we are failing miserably. Like, what is going on there? That's like a huge signal to me that like there's a disconnect somewhere. Or you might ask about like, is the client happy? And the team is like, no, not happy right now. But then you ask if how the team's feeling and they're like, we feel great. And it's like, why? If we're not like doing our job by actually keeping like the client's happy. So it's just a really good visual indicator of discrepancies, alignment. And then the best part about it is you do something else for a couple of weeks and then you measure those same things again and you can see the progress and the change. And then that is another cue to talk about, what did we do to change that? What does a 10 look like? What does a 0 look like? So I've just found that is an incredible tool visually,
yeah,
to see where people are.
Exactly. The artifact that you get is so dynamic. And I know, like, even when I use it with my team, I did a warm up where it was just something silly. It's like, rate these days of the week. Here's all the days of the week, 7 of them. Rate them from like your favorite to your least or whatever. We did 1 to 5 on it. And like, it's true. Like, you find these outliers and that drives conversation. Like, why do you like Thursday so much, John? And I'm like, well, it's, you know, the etymology of the word. It comes from the Norse god of thunder, Thor. And I have this whole reason why I like Thursday, but whatever. That all that being said, I did one where I asked the team, I kind of like subverted them a little bit. And I was like, what's your confidence on all of our projects? You know, we have all the different things going on. What's your confidence? And people just kind of laid them out. And there was like big gaps, like you said. And it's like, why do you feel so confident in this project and you feel so unconfident? And from the PO's perspective, you know, he was like, oh, it's on track, it's on budget, I feel confident. Mm-hmm. From like someone who was like really low confidence was like, I've never worked on the code for that project. I'm really scared if I first took something on. But it calls out those things as well as like the health of the project and things like that. And you see where people sync up, which was cool to do. But before you share your second most favorite protocol, Ken, do you have one that you really like to use with your team?
I have two.
What is with really both like of you with like follow the directions? Gosh.
Sorry. I already mentioned the drop, add, keep, improve one, but I also like the sailboat retro.
Oh, what is that? I don't think I've actually heard of that one before.
Okay, so the sailboat is like, where are we sailing to? That's our goal, right? You know, what's your sprint goal? And that's where we're sailing to. So what's the wind in our sail? What's helping the team move forward? What's helping us get there, right? And those are the things like we've talked about that we should keep doing, or maybe we could iterate and improve on them a little bit. And then we have the rocks, which are, you know, the risks, like what are the things that we should probably avoid? What's sort of out there on the horizon that we need to know is coming and potentially plan for. And then our anchor, like what's holding us back, like what's dragging us, taking longer than expected, those kind of things. That's the sailboat
that's
retro. Cool.
That's so that's like really metaphoric and really like, easy to parse out, you know what I mean? Like, that's great.
Yeah. The other one I really like is the 4 L's, mm-hmm. Which stands for liked, learned, lacked, and longed for. I think you can, you know, essentially a retro, I think, can always boil down to, you know, what went well, not so well, and what can we do to improve it? But whether you're using radar, the sailboat, the 4 L's, whatever, it's important how we ask the questions. You know, because it just makes us think a little different. So I'm like, hey, John, what did you long for last sprint? You know, sounds very differently than like, hey, what didn't go well? You know, because if I ask you what did you long for, you're like, man, I just wish that ticket had more clarity. Like if that would have happened for me, or if this thing would have happened in the sprint, that would have been like so good for me and the rest of the team. So I think it's important to mix it up. So when you ask me why two, you know, I like to ask the same thing multiple different ways because you just never know where you might land and what conversation may start. Jamie, what's your other one?
So it's not necessarily a protocol, but something that has changed our team. Our team's retro has been using the tool Parable. And usually I am very cautious about new tools. So I was like, okay, we'll give this a shot and see how it goes. But it's basically a tool on a website that I'm pretty sure is a free client. And you can host these meetings, these retros, where you have all these prompts, like the sailboat prompt, that protocol is already baked into it. And then team members can jot down their answers on cards, like on the site, anonymously, and answer all these different questions in real time. Take some time to think about it, be thoughtful, input it, and then you see all of these different answers, and the team can sort of observe them, group them into different themes. And then what I think is really fantastic about it is then people can actually take the time to vote on which topics they would like to discuss further. Because something that I think this has changed and shifted for me is the idea that I would have something in my mind as a scrum master that I had identified as the struggle, this sprint, or this is what I really felt contributed to whatever the outcome of the sprint was. And when you're asking certain questions, sometimes they can be leading, or you might bring the team back to this one, you know, concept or thought, and you feel like, oh, I just want to help them reach this one conclusion, and it's the most important thing. And by having this voting process and it being anonymous, it's their ability to steer the conversation and highlight what is most important to them as a team. And I found that super valuable. So now really, when I go into this, I'm just presenting the data, like the results of the sprint, and saying, this is our velocity. We improved by this much, or we dropped by this much. We hit our sprint goals, or we didn't. Okay, let's go in and answer all these questions. And that's been incredibly valuable for me. And I found that some of the team members that normally are a little quieter, or, you know, don't feel like they can take up as much space in the conversation, feel way more comfortable being able to jot down their thoughts, you know, quietly in about like a 5-minute time box, and then vote on what they want to talk about. And it doesn't involve them, you know, battling for space right. to be able to speak and voice their yeah. opinions. So it's kind of been like an equalizer for us. And I've really appreciated that. So still experimenting with it, but it's been a great tool, especially for teams who are remote. Like, it's been great for us. So wanted to share that.
I have seen and I have heard anecdotes where anonymous retro comments can sometimes be a safe way for someone to be passive aggressive, I suppose, which to me always gives me pause with those types of tools, be it, you know, Parable or funretro.io or whatever it is that you're utilizing. And how do you all feel about, you know, that issue? Have you ever seen it? Have you had to overcome it? Because it can be an easily misconstrued comment that can ruin someone's day.
Yeah, for sure. I think that this is, again, where like team norms come into play. And I remember being concerned about that too. And before we even started using this tool, somebody else had actually mentioned it. Like, this is a concern about like the anonymity and what can happen with that. And our agreement as a team is that if you are sharing something in here, yes, it is anonymous, but if somebody else wants clarity or needs to ask a question about it, if you wrote that, you need to be able to speak to it and speak up and discuss that point that you are sharing. I think there's also something to be said, like regardless of the tool you're using, setting the tone that it's okay to vent. It's okay to be frustrated. The retro is a place where it's like, this is where we need to lay it all out and work through this stuff. But it needs to be respectful and constructive. I think it's important to allow your team to vent. If there's something they're frustrated with, it can't all be just like, this is the clean cut thing that like, I think we should improve upon. Sometimes there's going to be times when you have a retro and it's like, I don't know why we're doing this. Why are we doing this thing? And you just want to throw up your hands. But sometimes you need to like relieve that pressure, but you have to be able to do that. And then turn around and think about, well, what do we do next to fix it? And with that tool, like I think just the agreement that it's okay to vent, but you have to be able to speak to it and talk through what you're sharing. And we all sort of hold that same understanding, which is really important. So I think setting the boundaries before you use something like this is really important.
For sure. I think makes me go back to what you were just talking about, Jamie, about giving folks the space to vent. You know, one of the other retro formats that I've heard used in the past is that I think it comes from weddings. There's a saying with weddings, like something new, something old, something borrowed, something blue. Have you heard of that yep. before? So like that, where the team's like, what's something new we're going to try this sprint? You know, what's something old that we should keep? You know, let's borrow something. What's another team doing that maybe we could try? And then something blue, like give folks the chance in the retro to say, well, that sucked. That sprint didn't go the way I was hoping it would. You know, just creating space to vent. Or, you know, hey, team member, I didn't appreciate it when you did that thing. And it made me feel less than, it made me feel walked on, or, you know, whatever. And giving folks the opportunity to say those things in a retro, I think, is huge for, you know, forming as a team and building trust for sure.
Cool. So I wanted to touch on, I guess, what do you all see as, like, you're closing out your retro? You know, like, the worst thing is having a meeting or an activity that doesn't do anything or result in anything, in my opinion. So how do you close out your retro? What are your artifacts that you carry forward from there?
I will say that for our team, we struggled for a while to be able to pull out a Kaizen or an improvement that we wanted to take on for the upcoming sprint. And I think I want to share this because I feel like a lot of people benefit from learning this and not having to go through it. It's very hard to just ask your team straight up as a scrum master, well, we need a Kaizen for this upcoming sprint. What do you all think? What ideas
do
you
have? It's hard enough to, like, figure out, like, if you're in a group setting, you know, when we're able to travel the world, like, what do you want to get for lunch? I don't know. Don't ask me. I don't care. And then you'd be like, let's do this. I don't want to go there. So it becomes really tricky. Yeah.
Or even worse, like, we come into or leave a retro with, hey, this is what we're going to do. Like, I have made the decision for the team.
Oh, you as the scrum master. Yeah, being like, hey, y'all, this is what we need to work on. Got it? I'm, like, the teacher or whatever.
Yes, I agree. Oh, no. So, like, what I have found works really well is when you share the data up front, give, like, the lay of the land of how everything is going, and then sort of let the team drive the conversation. As a scrum master, be comfortable with the silence. If there's some silence, allow the team to drive the conversation. And just create, I like to think of them as, like, bumpers or, like, guardrails for the conversation. You're not directing where it's going, but when it sort of veers off in one direction or we're not focused, just sort of provide an observation, share a data point, ask, like, have a prompt ready. And then you'll see where it goes from there. And while you're doing this, I like to take notes on all of it and just write down observations, like high level observations of what the team is discussing that maybe they're not putting their finger on, like, a precise thing, but there's, like, a theme running through the conversation. And I think that's where scrum masters become very valuable, because sometimes we can see the forest for the trees, if that makes sense. Like, we have a better big picture understanding sometimes because we have the space to step back and observe. And sometimes when the team is having these discussions, you get these observations that are, like I said, they're like threads. And then at the end, it's so much easier when you're trying to think of an improvement or a Kaizen to just be like, okay, these are the three things that I observed from this conversation that you all were just having. And that's so much easier to be like, do we want to try and improve on any of these things? Or is there something else you guys want to try? But giving them options, but also not directing them to be like, okay, this is it. Like, I said so as a scrum master. Gavel.
Boom,
like,
boom, boom. $50 in time saved.
Yeah. So I think it's great just to sit back and then share the observations and let the team take it from there. And that's been the best, most effective way for our team to generate Kaizens.
I think that's all true, Jamie. I think to play devil's advocate, I guess, a little bit, so often I see this theme again and again, and I'm guilty of it as well, where a scrum master is either too hands-on, like you're talking about. They're, like, leading everybody. Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and this is the thing, and we should work on this or whatever. Then there's the opposite of that. It's like you're observing, but you're not sharing. You're not being a part of the retro, which is not something that you want to do either. Like, you want to engage. So I think that's one fine line, but it's true. It's like, it's kind of like with daily stand up and, like, hey, what are your impediments? What are your blockers? You know, and the scrum master doesn't remove them personally, we facilitate the removal. And so, like, you're not setting the Kaizen, but you're facilitating the team in, like, getting clarity over, like, the common threads. I think that's totally, you know, on par and a great point.
And I will say that actually brings up a point that I want to make surrounding retros. And John, I completely understand what you're saying in terms of finding that balance. And one of the things you really have to get good at as a scrum master is sort of like reading your team, because I think both of those approaches are valuable at different times. You know, if you have a newer team, a greener team, you know, maybe you have some new team members, you're going to want to be more involved.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, yeah.
You know, not overbearing, but I think you need to drive that a little bit more. But if you have a seasoned team that you've been working with for, you know, a year or so, and, you know, I think you can sort of let them drive that conversation. They know what to expect, and you're able to jump in when you need to and participate, but it's completely different than the amount of like how hands-on you have to be with a greener team. So I think it's being really smart about reading your team and their experience and the comfort level between everyone.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. And you definitely want to be contextually aware. Like we talked about earlier, don't just like have the same retro questions every time, because then it becomes a little bit of a more than a habit, more than like an active engagement. But Ken, you know, what do you get from your team by the end of your sprint retros?
We try to walk away with a Kaizen item every time, you know, something that we're going to either improve upon, something that we're going to experiment with. And sometimes, you know, especially at the end of a rough sprint, you know, we have even just walked away with, we're just going to keep doing this one thing.
Yeah.
Like if that's what the team can handle, like that's what it is. And that's great. You know, or sometimes we've identified things as well as maybe we experimented with this thing last sprint and we just don't have enough data and we want to keep going on it. Let's try it again. You know, there's nothing saying that each sprint has to have a brand new, you know, Kaizen related to it or whatever. You know, just keep experimenting. And if you need longer for the experiment, take longer. You know, there's nothing really set in stone, but as long as we're leaving with some sort of progress, you know, is the way I would put it.
Right. Even if all you know is you have to keep going on the same path you are. Putting a right. name on it, putting like a label on it, it can be really beneficial and encouraging as well.
Something else I've found really helpful too is as you see these things come up during your retros, having sort of like a backlog of Kaizens too, because you're not going to be able to do 5 different things that you've identified at a time, but you also don't want to lose those things. Like they're still just as important and you want to experiment with them down the line too. So I think it's really helpful to keep a log of those, like document those, save them. When there's a sprint where you're like, I don't really know what we want to experiment with this time. Cool. Let's try something that we talked about a couple weeks ago and see how that
backlog,
works out.
Backlog.
I would. Yes.
Very cool.
Yes, definitely.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Two Scrums Up is hosted by me, Ken Medley, an Agile Process Leader here at Alley, and our Director of Agile Process, John Ragazine.
Our theme music is by Chris Montgomery, and our logo was designed by Kelsey Lakotis.
Two Scrums Up is a podcast distributed by Alley. Learn more at alley.co.
Our special guest today was the ever entertaining, ever intelligent Jamie Olmsted. Jamie, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
And last question for you, Jamie. What is the Fibonacci number of the day?
Ooh, I'm going to go with 5. 5 feels good.
High 5.
I like it.